Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom, and we are now in Masechet Bava Kama, Daf Chet Amud Bet, coming to the end of our discussion of Meitav, beginning with the statement Amar Rava, Reuven Shemachar Kol Sedotav L'Shimon. So let's say Reuven sold all of his fields. He had Idit, Beinonit, Ziburit, etc., and he sold it all to Shimon. And this is picking up on what we were discussing in the previous podcast about assumption of liability of properties that are really under warranty, as it were. What happened is Shimon then sold one of his fields to Levi, and now the creditors are coming after the land. The question is, who do they go afterwards? So Rava says, Vabachov de Reuven, Ratzami Zegove, Ratzami Zegove. He can collect from whichever, either Shimon or Levi, that he wants to. Now, of course, this is assuming that Reuven has got no land left. As we said, Reuven sold all his land to Shimon. Now, v'lom ranel adazavan beinonit. This only works if, now remember we're talking about Abachov, this only works if Shimon bought beinonit. Levi bought beinonit. Abazavan edit v'ziburit, but if Levi went out of his way to buy edit and ziburit and leave beinonit with Shimon, then lo. Why? That's exactly why I went out of my way to buy Idit v'Ziburit, to get the land that's really not coming to you, not fit for you. And Vafilu Zavon Benonit Nami, even if he left Benonit, meaning even if he bought Benonit, sorry. Lo Amran Elad Loshir Benonit Chavate, but that's only true if he did not leave sufficient Benonit with Shimon that's of the same grade as what he bought, that the guy could collect from. Then he couldn't say, I left you somewhere to collect from Shimon. But if he left parallel Benonit with Shimon, the Balchov can't come to Levi. I left space for you to collect from. Now, that's one statement of Rava. So in sum, what Rava says is that if the Baal Chov, the only situation under which the Baal Chov could possibly collect from Levi would be if Levi bought specifically the Beinonit. There is not enough Beinonit, or there's no Beinonit, or there's not enough Beinonit to collect from Shimon for the Chov. But if either Levi collected Idir v'Ziburit, or even if he collected Beinonit but left Beinonit with Shimon, which is enough to collect from, then the Baal Chov cannot come to Levi, because Levi knew that Shimon had this lien on his stuff. He made sure not to buy all of it, or at least to leave Beinonit for the collection. That's halacha number one. Now, Abaye adds in, Reuven Shemachar Sadeh L'Shimon B'Achrayut. If he sold a field to Shimon, Reuven is going to become the debtor. Reuven sold a field to Shimon B'Achrayut. V'ata Baal Chov D'Reuven Atar V'Shimon. And then Reuven's Baal Chov came and collected it from Shimon. Dinahu da'azel Reuven mishtai dina v'hadeh. Reuven has the rights to go and encounter the Baal Chov and deal with him. And the Baal Chov can't say to Reuven, I got nothing to do with you. Your field is gone. It's now Shimon's. It's between me and Shimon. Reuven can come and he can get involved in the case. Why? Damar le'imafket minei. If you are successful in seizing the property from Shimon, Ma'alai Hadar, he's going to come back after me, and that, I don't want that, so you have to deal with me. V'ikadamri, some people even said, Afilu Shalobachreut Nami, even if he sold the field Shalobachreut, meaning that if the field is seized, if Shimon gets the field seized, he has no legal recourse back to Reuven. I don't want Shimon to be mad at me. In other words, I sold Shimon a field. I want to keep my good name. I want to keep my good relationship with Shimon. If you're coming after Shimon for the field, you got to deal with me first, and I'll find a way to appease you, to pay you off, etc. But I am your Baal Dvarim. That's the second halacha. Miyam Rabbi, Reuven Shemachar Sadeh L'Shimon Shelo B'Achrayut. Again, the same case. V'yatsu Aleha Asikin. And after he sold the field to Shimon, and he sold it B'Achrayut, but Shimon had not yet taken possession, as we'll see. And subsequent to that, there are asikin, which means there are some people who are challenging Reuven's original ownership of the field. In that case, then, if Shimon had not yet taken possession of the field, yachol achzorbo, he can say, forget it, I want my money back, take your field back. I don't want to deal with this knotty problem. Mishachzik ba, but once he took possession, en yachol achzor bo. Why not? My taima, Damarle, Reuven can say to him, chay to the katri, sabr v'kablit. You took this bag full of knots. In other words, you already saw that there was a challenge on the field. Nonetheless, you went in, took possession. We'll see what that means in a second. And you now have to deal with it. When is this chazaka happen? The minute he walks onto the property. The minute he crosses the border of the property to take possession, Shimon has already got possession. He cannot renege on the deal. He now has to deal with the people who are challenging Reuven's original ownership. Now, v'dafka shelo b'achriyut. This only works if the field was sold shelo b'achriyut, in which case Shimon will not be able to come back to Reuven in case he loses the field. V'b'achriyut lo. But if it was sold b'achrayut, then he can't renege on it because if it's sold b'achrayut, then he can renege on it even later. That's part of the achrayut. V'ikadamri, some people say, afilu b'achrayut nami. Even b'achrayut, once he's taken possession, he can't renege. Damrleach v'terfach v'shalim lach. Reuven can say to him, show me that your field was actually seized and I'll pay you. In other words, you can't come to me and complain that now you're going to be dragged into court to try to prove stuff. That's your problem. You knew that you saw that it was a troubled thing. Nonetheless, you took possession. So you have to deal with it. And if they actually seize the field from you, show me the tirfa, show me the star that says it was seized, and then I'll pay you back. Okay. Now, Rav Huna makes a statement which either is a comment on the contradiction that we identified a little while ago between, that was raised to, the Abai raised to Rava, between the possibility of metav, which the Torah said and which we presented at the end of the Mishnah, as opposed to the word yashiv in the context of payment for nizke bor, kesef, yashiv the valav, and the drush on that was, kol mili afilu subin, larbot shava kesef afilu subin, you can give any sort of goods as payment for damages. And so we went through all sorts of possible resolutions to that, kan midato, kan balkorcho, and that was the way Rava read it, and then we ultimately said that, that Rava's later take was that anything you give has to be metav, like the best brand, the best whatever it may be, and then we came up with the other solution, which is that all goods are considered metav. The only area where there's something that's not metav is land, and therefore we demand a certain grade of land when paying. Rav Huna then comes along and says the following: O kesef o metav. So he says there's two options of paying. Either kesef, as it says in the pasuk of Bor, kesef yashiv d'valav, or metav, metav sadeu. So, in other words, he sees there as being two, one option given in the context of shen v'regel, metav, one in the context of Bor, kesef. We roll them together and say, anytime there's nezikim, you can pay with kesef, which is cash, silver, or metav, which is land. He doesn't allow for goods. Now, etivei, Rav Nachman, Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman challenged Rav Huna from the drasha that we've already dealt with, yashiv, about shava kesef filu subin. That means you're allowed to give goods. So Rav Huna would answer, "Acham ayaskin him b'delaitle." We're talking about a case where the guy has no goods. So has no money and has no land, so he can give goods. Delaitle pshita. If that's all he has, so it's obvious that's what he pays with. No ma'u detem amrin lezil torach zovin va'aiti lekesk saf. We might tell him you have to trouble yourself in zovin, sell and bring money. In other words, sell your goods, give money, and pay off with money. Kamash Malan, the Torah says yashiv, which means if you don't have anything else, you can give goods. All right, that's Rav Huna. Now, Amar Ravasi, Ksafim Haren Kekarka. Ravasi said an independent statement, which is kesef is like karka. Now, Lamai Hilchata, in what context was he saying it? Meaning, for what purposes was he equating kesef to karka? Ile mele inyan metav, if you think it's for the purposes of metav. To say that just like you pay with land. Of course, it could be metav, you can pay with kesef. Hanu Rav Huna, that's exactly what Rav Huna said. Why should Rav Asi repeat it? Let him say, Aloha Rav Huna. El l'shnei achim shechalku v'natal achad karka v'chag safim. He must have been talking about the following case. Two brothers divided their father's estate, and they divided it as follows. One took all the land, the other took all the money, and somehow they divided it equally. Or they worked it out. Uvam balcho v'natal karka. And then father had a creditor, came and seized land. And what's kesef haren kekarka equating the two? Meaning, to azel hai b'shakel palga b'ksafim b'hadei. The brother who took the land can come to the brother who took the money and say, my land was seized, you now have to pay me half of what was seized out of your money. So pshita, that's obvious. Hi brava, hi lo bra, this one's a son, this son's a son. This one bears the responsibility for his father's debt and this one doesn't. They're brothers. So it's obvious that he can say that. Now, Ikadamri, actually, we turn it around. That's why I put a 180 degrees on the page. Adarabba, Lidach Gisa, he could argue the opposite way, that it won't work. Da'amarle, Lahachi Shaklik Sofim, he said, that's why we divided the way we did. I took the money to protect you. De Megan Vilom Ishtalam Naminach. That if they steal, I'm not going to come collect from you. In other words, I took the money as I wanted liquid assets, and if there's a theft, I'm going to lose it, and I won't have recourse to come and take some of it from your land. That's why you took land. That if they seize the land, as by a court seizure, you can't come and collect from me. So that's why we divided the way we did. You took the land, I took the money. I took the money to protect you against theft. You took the land to protect me against seizure. So I'm not going to pay you. So either Ravasi's statement is too obvious or it's wrong. In other words, is either too obvious or wrong. That can't be what he meant. Elo l'shnei achim shechalku. He must have been referring to a case of two brothers who just divided land and property equally. Not land versus money, but they just divided everything equally. And the Balchov came and seized and happened to be in one of their portion. Meaning that he can now go back and collect at least some from his brother. Now, Ravasi already said that. Deitmar, we have the following. Hachim shechalku, you had brothers divided the estate. Question is, what's their status? We saw Rav Nachman's halacha, that they are considered lekuchot, and has to, Rav Yochanan's halacha, and it comes back by Yovel. Ubal Balchov natal chelko shel achad mihem. Brothers divided an estate, and the Balchov of the father came and seized from one of their portions. Rav amar batla machlokot. Rav says they are pure yorshim. Therefore, their original division they made is now nullified. We have to redivide minus the land that was seized. Shmuel Amar Viter. Shmuel says that guy lost his land. Because the division makes them like purchasers and owners, and my piece of land was the one he picked, I lose. Ravasi Amar Notel Revia Bekarko Revia Mount. That Ravasi says that the brother who had it seized can take a quarter of the payment, either from land or money, from his other brother. And we'll see why. Rav Amar Batla Machloket, why? When brothers divide, they're 100% Yorshim, and therefore, as Yorshim, the estate has to pay. It came out of that guy's land, and therefore, we have to redivide. Shmuel Amar Viter, why? Once brothers divide, they are considered to be purchasers. That has implications for Yovel and other things. They are considered to be purchasers from each other. And therefore, each one is like a lokeach shelo b'achrayut. So when the Baal Chov comes and seizes from brother A, brother A has no recourse to brother B. It's like he bought it shelo b'achrayut. Ravasi amar notel revia b'karko revia b'maot. Ravasi says that you take a quarter. Why? Masafkali ki yorshin damu ika lekuchot damu. He's unclear whether Rav is right or Shmuel's right as to the status of the brothers. Therefore, he takes a quarter, which means the brother who got it seized can get a quarter of what he had seized. He ends up paying three quarters of the debt. His brother pays a quarter because it's unclear. But the point is that Ravasi already said this halacha. So why would Ravasi come along and say, Ksafim harein kikarka, if he already said it in this context? And the idea being that Ravasi said here you could collect either from money or from land so that they're the same. Alamayr in Kakarka, so what does it mean? L'inyan Meitav. Go back to our original answer, that he means L'inyan Meitav, you can pay with Kesef, just like you can pay with Karka. So Yachi and Ravuna, so then it's the same thing Ravuna said, which is our original question. So Eim of Achinam Ravasi, so we should read, back in a few lines up, at the beginning of the Amud, it shouldn't say Amar Ravasi, it say V'chinam Ravasi. So Ravuna said, O Kesef O Meitav, V'chinam Ravasi, Ksafim in Kakarka. Good, Ravasi had a different formulation, I mean a different way of expressing it. Ravuna had his way of expressing it, but they were saying the same thing, that when you have to pay for damages, you can pay with Meitav or with Kesef. All right, good. And then he will say that the yashiv, to allow you to pay with goods, is only if you have neither Kesef nor Meitav. Okay, the end of our piece has a curious little tangent. Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Huna. Again, we're quoting Rav Huna. B'mitzvah ad shlish. When it comes to paying for a mitzvah, you have to pay up to a third. Unclear what this means. My shlish, what's the third? Elam shlish beito. You think when there's an opportunity to do a mitzvah, you have to spend one third of your assets to fulfill it? Let's say three mitzvot came to your doorstep at the same time, a pidyon shvuyim and some tzedakah, and helping somebody get married. Right? So you have to pay up to a third of your assets at that point. Later, the kulei beita, you're going to give them everything. You're going to one third, one third, one third, and you're gone. The assumption is if they come to Zachar Zeh, you give one third of what you got, and then you got one third of what's left. But if they all come at the same time, of course, this is an inherently rejected statement. They're just arguing ad absurdum to show that it won't work. Ela Amar Rav Zera Behider Mitzvah. Rav Zera says, what did Rav Huna say when he said Adshlish? Behider Mitzvah, Adshlish B'Mitzvah, meaning that whatever you normally spend for that mitzvah, to do a Heder Mitzvah, you should spend up to a third more. So, for instance, if you normally spend $60 on an etrog, spend $80 on an etrog. Now, Bar Ravashi, shlish milagav, shlish milavar, is the third within the amount, or is it besides the amount? Meaning, do you say, in the example that I gave, if you normally pay 60, so one third of 60 is 20, and so therefore the aggregate, the total will be 80, meaning 60 plus a third, or do you say that a third of what you totally spend should be hidur? In which case, you would end up paying 90, not 80, because a third of 90 is 30, and two-thirds is the base, and one-third is the hidur. The answer is teku. Unclear whether it's milagav or milavar, whether we count the third from the base sum or from the aggregate. Now, b'marava amri mishmei de Rabbi Zeira, in Eretz Yisrael, they quoted Rabbi Zeira. Again, going back to this original statement that he was quoting Rav Huna saying, they quoted Rabbi Zeira saying, ad shlish mishalom mikan ve'elach mishalach kodesh baruch hu. Up until the third is yours, afterwards is the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So, an interesting machlokot we showed him how to understand this. According to Rashi and Tosfot, what it means is that the first third is stuff that you give up, and that's what you pay out. A Kodesh Baruch Hu will take care of you in the world to come, but that's what your obligation is, as it were. Anything beyond that that you want to spend on Hiner Mitzvah, that's Minshallah Kodesh Baruch Hu. He'll pay you back in this world. The other way that some Rishonim read it, the Rach, for instance, says, Ashlish Mishalo means you only have to spend up to a third extra from stuff that you've earned, stuff that you've worked for. Anything beyond that that you want to spend is only from gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, windfall, etc. In any case, that's the little tangent that we have, that's really here because of Rav Huna's discussion of how to apportion money and the role of Kesef within payment. In any case, we've come to the end of our discussion of the first Mishnah, and we will begin with Mishnah Bet in the next podcast on Daf Tet Amud Bet. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.